in the translation. Therefore, beyond this gross manifestation is a transcendental manifestation, finer than the finest form. It has no beginning, no intermediate stage, and no end. Therefore, it is beyond the limits of expression or mental speculation and is distinct from the material conception. Wow, what a verse. But what does it mean? Let's hear from someone who knows. The gross external body of the Supreme is manifested at certain intervals, and thus the external feature or form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not the eternal form of the Lord, which has no beginning, no intermediate stage, and no end. Anything which has a beginning, interim, and end is called material. The material world is begun from the Lord, and thus the form of the Lord before the beginning of the material world is certainly transcendental to the finest or the finer material conception. The ether in the material world is considered to be the finest. Finer than the ether is mind, intelligence, false ego, but all eight of the outward coverings are explained as outer coverings of the absolute truth. The absolute truth is therefore beyond the expression and speculation of the material conception. He is certainly transcendental to all material conceptions. This is called nirvisheshanam. One should not, however, misunderstand nirvisheshanam as being without any transcendental qualifications. Visheshanam means qualities. Therefore, nir, added to it, means that he has no material qualities or variegatedness. This nullifying expression is described in four transcendental qualifications, namely unmanifest, transcendental, eternal, and beyond the conception of mind or word. Beyond the limits of words means negation of the material conception. Unless one is transcendentally situated, it is not possible to know the transcendental form of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nirvishesha shunivadi pashtachari shatarini. Srila Prabhupada. Omagyana tamirandasya gyananjana shalaka chakshura militam jena tasmai shi guruve. Hare Krishna, everyone. Good morning. Hare Krishna. This chapter 10 obviously follows chapter 9, in which we have a very personal exchange, probably one of the most personal exchanges in any philosophical book. It's where God himself shakes hands with the first being of the universe. So that's chapter 9, we find that. Chapter 10 is where we have these, you could say, easily misunderstood expressions. But the beginning of chapter 10 gives us a warning. If chapter 9 wasn't enough of a caution for you that the Lord shakes hands with Brahma, then chapter 10 begins with a sort of a, you know, be cautious, because sometimes in Vedic literature, even in Puranic literature is more about defining the personal attributes of God and his visheshana. But, you know, be cautious. This is sometimes defined in a negative way. In other words, God exists, but he's beyond the mind. The mind cannot comprehend him. The words cannot go that far. Oh, well, if my words cannot go that far, then how can God exist? Because I can't talk about him. How can we ever talk about something that doesn't exist? Therefore, God doesn't. I can talk about anything. This is my comprehension of reality. If you can talk about it, it's real. If you can't talk about it, it's either a conspiracy, it's not real at all, or it's just someone's imagination. So my life is important. I don't know about you, but my life is important. I can't waste time, says the philosopher. It's either real or it's not real. And if I can't talk about it, it's sort of the same as saying it's not real. But in this chapter we discover, no. It may be expressed in a negative way, but that it's an indirect way. The negative way is an indirect way of saying that he's above all perception. You see? And sometimes he's referred to indirectly. Like we've understood the Lord has form in this world. And in this chapter, it's sort of a Sankhya chapter. Sankhya means to enumerate, to count things. Sankhya means, I gave class at the temple this morning, and there was 15 ladies, and there was 30 men. That's a Sankhya statement. Or Sankhya means, I go to the Bhaktivedanta Manor treasurer, and I say, how much money is in the bank account of Bhaktivedanta Manor? And he goes, well, it's not how much money we have, it's the feelings. You know, it's a sort of feeling of being rich. That's a non-Sankhya statement. A treasurer is meant to be able to count. So to a certain extent, a philosopher is also meant to be able to count things. If you're an accountant, what I'm saying will make a lot of sense. If you're an artist, it won't. You know. How many notes are contained in Beethoven's Fifth Symphony? How many notes? It's not important. Is it important? It's not important. It's the feelings that we get when we listen to the music. But if you ask a musician, you know, how many notes? And where are the notes on the stave? And he'll say, well, it starts off with a difficult bit and then it gets complicated and then it gets more simple. Musician has to know. His job is to read the notes and to create the music, which will then give you the feelings. So in the Bhagavatam, we have all these things. We have Sankhya, and we also have the feelings. But you've got to hold on. If this chapter you find boring, because there's no demons getting killed, no descriptions of beautiful Vamana Dev or anything, hang on. The Sankhya is there for a purpose. It's meant to help you to make an... Sankhya is all about an analysis. It's an analysis of the human condition. Is it not for every living being? Is the Bhagavatam not for every... No. Dharma projita kaitavo niramat saranam satam. It's not for... These books are not for everybody. Not for everybody. Not everybody will be sitting here this morning or listening at home. Thank you for listening at home. We know you're there. We love you all. Your presence is noted. But so the one kavi has said that the Vedas speak to us as a... I've forgotten the quote. Anyway, the Upanishads speak to us as a... What is it? A philosopher. The Vedas speak to us as a king. The Puranas speak to us as a lover, but the Bhagavad Purana speaks to us as all three, something like that. So in the Bhagavatam you'll find everything. In a Purana has to have five ingredients to make it a Purana. If those five elements are not in a Purana, it's not a Purana. In any Mahapurana, you can count 10 elements. These are the contents. So in the last chapter, we have a section of very important content. We begin with, of course, the lead up to what is known as the four seed verses. If you've been here for the past few days, you will know about this. So this is highly, highly personal. So it's safe, I would have thought, to have a somewhat Sankhya chapter after a highly personal chapter. So the Lord speaks the seed verses to Brahma, and then he disappears. And Brahma explains the Bhagavatam to his son Narada Muni. And this is a declaration of the beginnings of the Brahma Sampradaya. He speaks it to Śrīla Vyāsadeva. Narada speaks it to Vyāsadeva. And ultimately, Vyāsadeva expands it in the form of the Bhagavatam. Text 33 of chapter 9. Brahma, it is I. The personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Well, that's a statement for any impersonalist, isn't it? It's all one, man. It's all one. It's all God. Everything is God. Krishna agrees with him. Oh, young man with a backpack in Kathmandu. Okay. I believe that everything is God. It's true. But the Bhagavatam has a refinement. Prabhupada said it is like a cow. And then you milk the cow. And what was inside the cow is now outside the cow, and it's called milk. I'm looking at Shamsundar here. Just correct me if I'm not, if I go astray. So this is a cow, and the milk is inside the cow. Is that right, Sham? Then you milk the cow, and the milk is outside the cow. Okay. So previously there was one thing called cow, one concept, cow. I know what a cow is. I look at it in the field. It goes moo. There's a back part and a front part. That's my knowledge. Yes, I've grown up at Bhaktivedanta Manor, but that is my limited knowledge. You milk the cow, you don't milk the bull. So, and Prabhupada said, it is the milk is the separated energy of the cow. It is the bina prakriti. It is the separated energy. Previously, when you saw the cow in the field, you did not see the milk. The milk was a latent potentiality within the cow. Then by some trickery, some black magic, they're pulling the teats and out comes the milk. And then the milk is the separated energy of the cow. So now we have two things. But those two things are actually one. The cow is cow. The milk was also cow. It is still cow, but we give it a different label. So, some people drink milk without knowing from where it has come. They are called children from inner city London. They have no concept, and they come here. And the children come running to their teacher after being taken to the goshala, and they go, Miss, it's huge! Miss, it's big! Will it attack us, miss? He said, that's where we get our milk from. And you can see a look of puzzlement come across the child as they're trying to figure how can an animal put something in my cornflakes? How does that work? Because they've never seen a cow before. They don't know the process of extracting the milk from the cow. All they see is a white liquid, which they use on their Cocoa Smacky Honey Pops with extra added sugar to give you ADHD in your inner city London school. So that is the problem. So in this portion of the Bhagavatam, we find that some men and women, of course, they look at the milk not knowing who the cow is. They look at the energy without knowing who is the energetic. They look at this world, and if I can pour it on my cornflakes in the morning, then it means I have understood the full concept of cow. See? Because for me, the whole concept of cow is only important in milk. So for some philosophers, the entire universe is reduced to the separated energies, the Bina Prakriti Ashtada, the eight separated material energies. And that's it, that's my world, there's nothing beyond that. So now this chapter is telling us, oh no, there's something beyond that. It's not saying that the Absolute is Krishna. We have to wait a little while as a refinement that there is a person, personhood. Great philosophers like Madhva, Sri Ramanuja, great philosophers will take us gently by the hand and just take us through a set of logical propositions, each of which we're meant to say yes to. There's irrefutable logic at each step. And then the final step is our relationship with the Supreme, in which we can also shake hands with the Supreme. So these seeds of the Bhagavatam are being spoken here, 34, 35, and 36. 35 here, the Lord says, O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time, I'm outside of everything. So the cow is fully in the milk, but the milk is not now in the cow. You can think about that at breakfast time. And then we come to chapter 10, where there's a declaration. Are we all okay so far? Okay. There's stories in the second half of my class. Because it's Gopal Bhatta Goswami's disappearance day as well, so we should say something there. So the 10 subjects. He says the 10 divisions of statements. Firstly, a Mahapurana, you have to have the creation of the universe, because it's important for you to know how you got here. At least that declaration is there. You should know the connection between the universe and Mahavishnu. If you don't know the connection between Mahavishnu, most of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Vishnu. Most of the Srimad Bhagavatam is Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Whether he's shaking the hands of Brahma, creating, sleeping, being worshipped. Yeah. In the 10th canto, we get to Krishna. So creation of the universe, sub-creation, Brahma's creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord. This is the whole point. That I was having a discussion with a very scientific devotee, and he said that the statement, God creates the world, is not actually something that Vaishnavas would agree with. I said, what do you mean? He said, no. He said, the jiva, the collective jivas, are co-creators of this world. We bring this world into existence. God simply makes that arrangement. I said, well, that's one way of looking at it. Who is there that is the, when we consider Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, what is this beautiful lotus that comes from his navel? You know, the lotus is made up of billions upon trillions of jivas. If you were to zoom in, and in this lotus you find trillions of jivas all wanting their existence within the world. And for this reason it's created. So the next question is, well, this is a very dangerous place for the jiva. You don't belong here. You really don't belong here. It's dark. You don't understand anything. You don't understand where you've come from or where you've got to go. So what to do? So therefore the next thing is Porshanam, or protection by the Lord. You need to be protected. And therefore the Lord comes into creation. A change of Manus, the science of God. In other words, what is the relationship of the jiva to Vishnu? What is it called? The Tattva-Traya. The Tattva-Traya is a description of the Tattva, means the truth. Traya means three elements of the truth. Ultimately, there's only three elements that we have to get our head around. There is the Lord, the Jiva, matter, these three things. If you get your head around the relationship between these. And therefore, much of our Bhagavatam and much of our Bhagavad Gita is spent explaining this Tattva Traya. And for those who are creative artists, or for those who are specialists in narrative, for those of us who want to jump over all of that to get to the beautiful descriptions of the personality of Godhead, Bhagavad Gita says, wait. Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana says, no, wait. You must understand this bit first. Because if you understand this bit, only then can you progress. You know, cow, milk, cow. You understand that? If you don't understand that, don't tell me that you want to go and work in the Goshala. You've got to understand these fundamental things. Cow, bull, cow, milk, dung. You understand that? Cleaning, milking, cooking. You understand? So if I say to you, milk is something that comes out of the cow, and the cow does a big poo, and you come to me with a big saucepan full of poo to boil down and to make Mangalhati sweets, I'll think you're mad. So sometimes people have to be taught the very basics. So any book upon Krishna consciousness, we have to know the basics. And Tattva Traya is the basics. Okay. So one of the ways that we this nirvisheshanam, you know, it's I wrote a book about the philosophy based on Jiva Dharma, or based on Dashamula, in which I situated myself as a non-believing person, and I thought, what logical arguments would you have to take a person through in order to convince them of the ultimate, that the absolute is sentient? And if you put yourself in a very critical frame of mind, you can see that sometimes, because of our inclination to be devotees and to enjoy Krishna Bhakti, we skip a few beats, we skip a few philosophical points. And it's important, when explaining to people, that we take them with us. Otherwise we're not philosophers, we just, you can't blurt out the absolute truth. You have to make a logical, convincing argument. So it's very interesting. Very interesting. So a great acharya is one who takes a very... And for as much as Prabhupada said about Krishna, he was presenting us with these little points of logic. If this is true, then this is true. And if that second point is true, then the third point may also be true. And it's true because this. And you bring a person... As I've witnessed someone on the tour, sometimes we bring people on a tour of Bhaktivedanta Manor, and it's very bewildering. And sometimes I've overheard them speak, you know. And in the lobby, in the reception room, they say, there's only one God. Because the person has heard, well, Bhaktivedanta Manor is a Hindu temple, therefore, do you believe in many gods? And the devotee explains, first thing is, no, we believe in one God. And they go, I thought you were Hindus and you believed in many gods. No, only one God. And they come into the temple room and they say, here's the deities. Deities. Now, that's not our word. You may think it's a Prabhupada word. It's an English word. There's no such word as deities. If there is, deities mean demigods. But deity means one supreme God. But when you say deities, what you're actually saying to people in the English language is, here are the many demigods that we worship. So we have to be careful how we speak. Because if you're dealing with a philosopher or any kind of intelligent person who's read a dictionary, when you say deities, it means many gods. And the only category of God that is many gods is half gods or demigods. Deity is one supreme God. So actually when we bring people into the temple, we should say, here's the deity. These are the many faces of the deity. Then they'll begin to understand. Do you see? So we need to use English the way she was written. Otherwise people can't, you know. And then they take them to the other end of the temple room. And here's the Prabhupada deity. What does that mean? So then they say, well, you believe that the spiritual master is God. No, no, but this is he's in his deity form. Deity, you just called him God. Deity means God. So our English is sort of, you're looking confused. Deity does not mean statue. It does not mean murti. It's not a translation of the word murti. Deity, in the dictionary definition, is God. So here's the guru God. So, but we don't believe that he's God. Then why, my dear friend, are you confusing me with your language? Everything has to be very explicit and logical. Sometimes the logic is very... So the person who's a disappearance day today we are commemorating is Gopal Bhatta Das Goswami, who was asked by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to make a logical presentation of Krishna consciousness with all the confusing bits pulled out and the negative understandings removed. So this was his presentation. So he was, you know the story, of course. You know the story. He was living in Srirangam, which is an island, a temple on an island, near the town of Tiruchipalli, otherwise known as Trichy, if you're trying to get there. Who's been there? One person. I think everybody should go there. It's a very nice place. So Lord Chaitanya went there in the year 1510. He stayed there for 4 months in one person's home. That home was Venkata Bhatta. And the son, Gopal, was 7 at the time when Lord Chaitanya was there. He used to feed Gopal his own prasadam from his plate, look after him and tell him stories, such that when Chaitanya was going to leave to carry on after the rainy season, Gopal fainted. He became, you know, like children of 7 do. They become very anxious. Where are you going? You can't leave. So Chaitanya stayed for a few more days and then had to leave. He told them that, he said, you stay here. You look after your parents. He said, and then when you're older, you can come and visit me in Vrindavan. So Gopal was very faithful. And during the time when he was waiting to go to Vrindavan, he learned from his uncle. He learned rhetoric. See? Rhetoric. Poetry. Sanskrit grammar and Vedanta. He learned these things as a preparation to understanding the higher teachings. And so he learned from Prabodhananda Saraswati, who was his uncle. Prabodhananda Saraswati, he's a bit of a hammer, a bit of a hammer mouth. Have you ever read Prabodhananda Saraswati? When he opens his mouth, it's just like a hammer. There are a few hammers, you know. They usually need nails. Every hammer guru needs a disciple who's like a nail. So we have gurus who are like hammers when they open their mouth. Like, what was his name? Vyadiraj Tirtha. Vyadiraj Tirtha was so much of a hammer. It is said that when a person who was more into the Nirvishesha philosophy who was sitting in front of him, he could reduce him to tears just with Sanskrit verses. Anyway, there are persons like that, and then there are persons who are very convincing. There are persons who present poetry, song, and other types of presentations. We need them all. So Prabodhananda Saraswati was definitely a philosophical punch in the face. If you've read anything that he's written. So he learned all of that. His parents died, and he moved to Vrindavan. And as he arrived in Vrindavan, he saw that Rupa and Sanatan were compiling a letter. And this letter was giving an update to the Lord who was in Jagannath Puri. There was no email in those days. No Instagram pictures. This is me and my brother, Rupa and Sanatan, in Vrindavan. This is what we had today. This is the tree we slept in last night. Send. A letter was, it would take months to get there, because the person would walk on foot. So they were compiling an important letter about the events, you know, who they'd managed to, what they'd written, where they'd been, what the condition of Vrindavan was, how they were getting on with excavating the temples, writing the books, etc., etc. So then they were very happy to see Gopal. And they wrote to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Gopal from Sri Rangam has come, and he's come here to stay. So weeks and weeks later, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gets the letter, and he writes back. He says, I'm very happy that he's come. Please give him my blessings. Please ask him to, I would like him to assist the both of you in writing your books, and please give him this package. Well, that was nice. So he sent him his cloth. Now there are different accounts. Some say Lord Chaitanya sent his chadar. Some say he sent his kopin. Some say he sent other things. And one thing he did send was the wooden seat. The wooden seat upon which he sat. So those items still exist today. They're in a particular temple in Vrindavan. Once a year, they're taken out for public veneration. You can go and see them at that time. So a cloth that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually wore is under a framed, you know, glass case. You can go and see, along with a wooden seat. You can have darshan. So Gopal Bhatta was his second name, like Smith. Gopal was his first name. He was helping them with the writing, because of course he was a very educated person. He also knew from his father and the tradition, the Sri Vaishnava tradition, he knew many different agamas. Agamas is a handbook of Pancharatrik worship. It's usually the different ways of worshipping the Lord. Pancharatra has everything to do with deity worship and installation and ceremonies, temple building, which we don't find in the Vedas. Vedas have mainly Vayagyas, and Pancharatra has the other items. So Lord Chaitanya had asked for a Sanatan in the Madhya Lila chapters 20 to 22. The Lord said to Sanatan, I want you to write a book about Vaishnav Achar Sadachar. How to be a devotee. What do you do on a daily basis when you want to achieve this level of consciousness? What is it that you do? What is it that you do when you're convinced that you may one day shake hands with Krishna? If you want that elevated consciousness beyond the realm of the mind and the reach of the intelligence, the mundane intelligence, what is it that you do on a daily basis? Because what you do on a daily basis will form your character, will form your judgment, will form your perspective, will form your realization. What you leave out will slow you down, and what you do will speed you up. So they wrote a book, and it's a book called the Hari Bhakti Vilas, and it seems as if Gopal Bhatta Das Goswami contributed all the verses from the many shastras. Things like the Hayashirsha Pancharatra, the Lakshmi Tantra, the, what's it called, Ahirbudna, Ahirabhudnya Samhita from Lord Shiva, over 270 different shastras find their way into the Haribhakti Vilas. And for other occasional performances, a book known as the Kala Kaumudi, different samskaras. What do you do when you want to celebrate a wedding? A wedding is possibly romantic, it's celebratory, it's social. Well, how do you make it dedicated to Krishna? Okay. Moving into a new house could be mundane. Watch out. You could forget Krishna. How do you make moving into a new house something that will remind you of Krishna? So he wrote all about that. And we try to, in our life, we try to follow that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disappeared. The great difficulty of the age was the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he had a dream, and the Lord told him to go to Kali Gandaki and to get some Shalagram Shilas. So he went there. While he was on the way there, in a place called Deva Vandya, he met a Brahmin who looked after him, but he also looked after the Brahmin. Brahmin had no children. He said, "You've looked after me very nicely. I bless that you will have a children." And the Brahmin said, he said, "Whoever is my first son, I will send him to you, to Vrindavan." Now that seems like a strange thing to say. "Hello, come to my house, sit down, have something to eat. You know, you're such a nice person that my next child I'll give to you." What is this custom of giving children? Well, it was practiced in Ireland up until the 1950s. You know, you'd have four children. One child would be an accountant. One child would open up a shop. One child would be a lawyer. And one child would always be given to the church. This was such a thing that Ireland had, what they call a harvest of priests, a glut of priests, a tsunami of celibacy. They had so many priests they didn't know what to do with them, so they exported them to Africa. Now no more. Unfortunately, priests in Ireland, sometimes they get spat at in the street. But it used to be a thing that they would be brought. You know, one child would be sent to, and if a child got to be a priest, eventually got to be, was sent to the seminary. And if a child went through the seminary and qualified as a priest and took their vows, it was considered a great thing. So here we have a culture where it's actually considered a great thing that one of my children is assisting, is a Vaishnava. It's a great thing. My other children, they're doing business, but one child, one child I've given. So, you know the story, Gopal Bhatta Goswami went to Kali Gandaki in the Himalayas, retrieved one big Shila and 11 small Shilas, came home. And one Nrisimhadeva's appearance day, in the evening, or the following morning, he looked, and the Damodar Shila had turned into a threefold bending form of Krishna. And he called him, because the incident took place in the, what's that place called, Shringar Vat, where Lord Krishna ties or decorates Srimati Radharani's hair. A place called Shringar Vat. Is it Shringar Vat or Nityananda Vat? Similar places. Nityananda rested there. Anyway, he called him Radha Raman. Radha Raman. Was there a Radharani? No, there wasn't. But the understanding is that wherever there is Krishna, there is Radha. And eventually a temple was constructed in 1542. We have a strong relationship with that temple. Srila Prabhupada was very friendly with the Goswamis who ran that temple. And he said to his devotees in Vrindavan that you go to that temple and you discover how to worship Krishna, because their standard of worshiping Krishna is the highest. So devotees still go there with great delight. So then... The story has it, of course, that a rich man came to give some clothing, some deity clothing, to the Goswamis. But, with Shalagram Srila, it is difficult to use all the different items of clothing. Maybe a mukut, maybe a small piece of cloth, a flute maybe, but, what are you going to do with ankle bells? What are you going to do with these things? So he was lamenting. And from that lamentation, he said, "My dear Lord, you appeared from a pillar for Prahlad. Will you not appear for me?" That's the story anyway. So 1543, the temple was concluded. It was a beautiful temple. The boy came. Eventually the boy by this time was 20 or so. He came. No, before that actually. Don't know what age he was, but he came, 12, 13. He came, his name was Gopinath. And he was initiated as, eventually became known as Gopinath Pujari or Gopinath Acharya by some. So every one of Lord Chaitanya's associates was given a different function to perform. To Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, uncover the holy places, establish the worship of Krishna. Gopal Bhatta was told to write books by which one can easily expose, identify, detect apparent philosophies and practices. It's as much important. We live in a world now, of course, where the prevalent postmodern philosophy is that you should tolerate everything and respect everything, and everything is worthy of your full consideration. Well, for a Vedic philosopher, this is not acceptable. Some things are worthy of our respect, some things are not. Discrimination now is a bad word. Discrimination previously was a good word. If I don't discriminate between the microphone that I'm using to speak into and a spoon that I need to take breakfast down in the Haveli, then I start using the microphone as a spoon. This is not a very good thing. Can the microphone be used as a spoon? Yes, it can. You can stick it in the porridge and you can sort of lick the end of the microphone. Is it a good thing? No. Therefore, discrimination is important. Discrimination is important. It's important for me to bring the right glasses, otherwise I won't be able to read. It's important to have the right verse for the day. If I've researched, Canto 2, Chapter 10, Verse 43, that won't be much good, because that's not today's verse. Discrimination is something that we do every few microseconds within the body. It's a natural process. Sankalpa, vikalpa. Is it good for me? Is it not good for me? Sankalpa, vikalpa. If you don't know what's good for you, you won't get it. You won't know what it looks like. If you're trying to become... Sorry, I thought a new religious sect was breaking out. I was about to go into hammer mode and say, "What would Srila Prabhupada say if he saw everybody wearing red hats? You're trying to start a cult." So cults do begin when you don't know very slight differences of philosophical presentation. You don't detect them. You have to detect them. That's why when Prabhupada was confronted with these four sannyasis, he created four sannyasis, and they were saying that the problem is Prabhupada is very disappointed with all of us here in America. And they said, "Why?" He said, "Because he's going back to India." "Why?" "Because some of you have failed to realize the actual truth of Prabhupada." Well, they were sannyasis, of course. They had to be listened to. That's what you do with sannyasis, you listen to them. So they said, Well, we haven't fully what you haven't fully realized, but what we have realized is that Prabhupada is Krishna. Prabhupada is Krishna. And because you haven't realized it, therefore he's going back to India in disappointment. As soon as Prabhupada heard that, he said, you, out. Get out. Leave my movement. I don't care what you do. Go somewhere else. And when they did go, it's interesting, because when they did go somewhere else, they were doing kirtan outside a library. Inside the library was a display of Krishna art, some sort of Indian exhibition. At that exhibition was a young man, and he said to the caretaker in the library, he said, could you explain this picture to me? And it was Krishna in the middle of a circle of cowherd maidens dancing around. He said, what does this picture symbolize? And the caretaker said, well, I'm sorry, so the library's closing now, you have to... He walked out of the library, and there were these four sannyasis doing harina. And he said, what are you doing? He said, you're singing Krishna. I was just thinking, it's Krishna, yeah, you want to know more? And he became Indrajumna Swami. So the fact that four sannyasis were, they were, what's the word? Excommunicated, yeah. Very rare thing. But a very rare thing that had good consequences. But the point here is that unless you're very discriminating between what is acceptable and what is not, then you'll accept the unacceptable. And your Krishna consciousness will be something created by your own mental projection. And that's very comfortable and soothing and reassuring. But it's not Krishna consciousness as it is. It's Krishna consciousness, as William Shakespeare would say, as you like it. So we don't want Krishna consciousness as you like it. We want Krishna consciousness as it is. So therefore we trace everything that we do back to someone who said, this is how you do it. And after years and years, or a lifetime in preparation, Prabhupada came, and he was full of details. He had the big stuff, the broad sweeps of the big, wide paintbrush, and the fine, you know, one squirrel, little hair. Sometimes artists paint with a little brush, and sometimes with a big brush. He had everything. So, a person who's interested in details, don't call them a fanatic. They're not a fanatic. They're just a person who may be interested in detail. If you're not interested in detail, that's okay. But don't call another person a fanatic, because they are. You see? Or if you're interested in detail, but you miss out on, you know, the most important things. You know? Like the time Prabhupada was coming out of a... There'd been a rain in Vrindavan, and there was a big puddle, and he had to cross the puddle. And a devotee came forward, and he was reciting Bhagavatam verses. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, do something practical. There's all this rain water here. So the big things must be done, the small things must be done. In the business of both practice, swadhyay, study, sadhana, siddhanta, all these things, and sankirtan, all these things are there. So Gopal Bhatta Goswami Ki Jai. And of course he helped to write the Satsandarbhas, which is still considered to be Jiva Goswami's masterpiece. But part of the framework was brought together by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Such a masterpiece of medieval philosophy that if you go to Varanasi in the Sanskrit university there, or the University of Varanasi, you find one whole room, one whole library. It's called the Jiva Goswami Library. So highly placed was Jiva Goswami. Even the Emperor of India came to meet him. Good. Okay, we've gone over time. Any questions? breakfast time, isn't it? Sham. I'll answer briefly, then we all go. You're asking for a percentage definition? Are you asking for a percentage? I don't know. You're sitting next to someone who may know. There's Balaji here, is a student of Hari Bhakti Vilas. We have a nice version of Hari Bhakti Vilas, which has just been put together by one of our devotee scholars, two of our scholars actually. Krishna Kshetra Swami did a treatment, and Bhrigupad Das did a treatment, a version. And it seems that most of Hari Bhakti Vilas is a... The way Prabhupada explains it in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is that it is a treatise which was meant to be a handbook for everyone who needed a handbook at that time. So there's huge chunks of something called the Kumara Samhita, which was already a handbook, which was sort of directly brought in. There seems to be influences. So it's a compendium, you could say. It's a compendium of different approaches to worshipping Krishna that many, many Brahmins would have been familiar with. So we have 270 other books that are quoted within the Hari Bhakti Vilas. So I don't know how it all boils down to how much of it is original, but I would think that the our Sampradaya's contribution is the ordering of it and the segmenting of all these different quotations into 20 chapters. Vilas means chapter, so Hari Bhakti chapters. So we deal with what is a guru, what is initiation, how to be initiated, what is the qualification of the disciple, that's in the beginning, and sadhana, daily activities, occasional activities, deity installation, building temples, how to worship the Lord on special festival days, it's all described in Hari Bhakti Vilas. Now, that doesn't mean that we refer, there is no ISKCON Hari Bhakti Vilas manual. But what I assume that has been done over time is that our Sampradaya sort of went underground at a certain point, you know, and many Vaishnav sadhus did not have a temple. After the 1600s, it was very much a reclusive pursuit, until, you know, for another 200 years, until Bhaktivinoda Thakur basically sort of brought people out of hermitages and said, look, Vaishnavism is something for the world, therefore we need public temples, therefore we need a lot of other different things. But it was sort of an exegesis of the original. So he streamlined in different ways, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati streamlined in different ways. So what we have is a movement that uses some things, but not everything. So much of what we do, for instance, when we come into the temple, we have Charanamrita, the verse that we say for Charanamrita, you know, the way that we, you know, prostrate ourselves before the murti of Srila Prabhupada, Guru Puja, offering flower petals, ringing the bell, doing different things on festival occasions. These things we've preserved. There's a lot of other things that we have not preserved. So devotees have some aptitudes for this, and they do it. Some have an interest in revival. You know, when I got married in 1982, I wanted to have a wedding, but no one knew how to do a wedding. It's in this room. Nobody, what is a Vaishnav wedding? We had to research, do the research. So, what is a religion without a wedding? What is a religion without a funeral? How do you celebrate Vaishnav funerals? There are things that we do and things that we don't do. So much of that is not to do with personal sadhana, but it's social, the social application of religion. So some are for further streamlining. I sort of call them Protestant Vaishnavas. And some are for greater expansion of ritual and ceremony. And we can call those Catholic Vaishnavas. And there will be hot contest between the two, I think. Both of them will say, Prabhupada never wanted this. But we have to be respectful of inclinations. Anyway, that's it. All right. Breakfast. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gopal Bhatta Goswami ki jai. Hare Krishna.